My name is Mike, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at NABBA Club. There, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous of one year or more of sobriety tells his or her own story. This reading is based on the passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our own personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership, a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope that no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. So when I first came into AA, all the old-timers used to sit along the wall over here. And now we've got Brian and Nick. So, and if I remember, Stan Parks used to sit up here, didn't he? And Joey Lewis used to sit right here. And but Mickey, I think you've always sat on that side of the room, didn't you?
I started over there.
You did, okay.
They ran the smokers out. And
that's right, okay. My brain was a little foggy back then. But I noticed, I'm just looking up here, I didn't realize you got stuck at the same time Stan did. That's pretty amazing. Mickey's been around for a long time. He's got a very powerful message. And they say the way you'd be an old-timer in AA is not drink and not die. But I think there's a few other things that happen along the way. And I'm real excited to introduce our speaker tonight, Mickey.
Let me get my cheat sheet out here. Am I close enough? I hadn't got my hearing aid yet. My name is Mickey Bjork, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you. My sobriety date is the 3rd of January, 1977. That's 41 years, and that's a little bit longer than I've drank. I feel like to really tell you something about myself, I need to start with family. I was born in Bozeman, Montana, at my grandmother's house, because my father was in the hospital there recovering from tuberculosis. I was a little over a year old. The doctor said he was cured. Turned him loose, and we went back to Iowa where he could finish his PhD. After that, we ended up as a professor at John Brown University in Silent Springs, Arkansas. From there, the war broke out and transferred my father to a Defense Department Ordnance Laboratory in Indian Head, Maryland. When the war was over, they turned him loose and went to work for Celanese Corporation in Orange, New Jersey. And we made a short stop with him in Cumberland, Maryland. And just about the time I was starting the first grade and started making a few friends, we picked up and headed for China Lake Naval Ordnance Test Station on the Mojave Desert in California. So we were, I guess you'd call us Defense Department gypsies. After a short stay there, we picked up, headed for Huntsville, Alabama, where my father had a job in the research department.
It's drunk. There we go.
We tried that. And we once again picked up and took off across the country moving. It just seemed like we were never in one place long enough to need any friends. I was fairly shy. It was George Gobel talking about a pair of brown shoes and a world of tuxedos. That's how I felt. I felt that I just wasn't part of. I was always off there to the side someplace. Which when I got sober, I realized that most of that was up here in my head. California, I guess I was 12 or 13 years old when we left there, but I had a cousin whose father was stationed down at the Marine Annex at near Barstow, California, And they used to come up and visit us on occasions. And being we had a three-bedroom house, his parents got my bedroom. So BJ and I ended up in a tent out in the backyard camping out most of the time, which is, we decided that they didn't count the cans of beer in the refrigerator. And we decided we could sneak in there and get a beer. That was okay. Hated the taste of it, but I loved the feeling. And that persisted all the way through my drinking career. I guess by the time I was sophomore in high school, we were drinking beer on a regular basis. We had two or three bootleggers and a couple beer joints that would sell beer out the back door. Don't remember ever having a cooler, though. Drank them hot, which, man, you've got to have a stamina to drink hot beer. And about that time, I started getting in trouble in school. And ended up in a war with the principal at the school. He didn't like me, and I didn't like him. And a lot of the trouble I got into, I got into the trouble because I was doing something to spite him. Well, caught up with me in 11th grade, right before we were starting school for our senior year. I got in a fight with some people that were visiting, and they called a kangaroo court in the middle of the night. And myself and two of my buddies, we decided we wasn't going to put up with that bullshit. We jumped in the car and took off for Ardmore, Tennessee, where they didn't care whether you had an ID or not. They'd serve you beer, whiskey if you wanted it. And we didn't get back home till about 3 or 4 in the morning. And my mother said they were still at the school waiting for me. So, bullshit, I'm going home, go to bed, which I did. Next day they threw me out of school, my senior year, and one of the few times my father ever took up for me. At any rate, I decided that their option for me was to join the service, and when I got out of the service, I could come back, and they would probably let me finish high school. Well, I wasn't going to go along with that deal, so I went down to Decatur, Alabama, and rented a room in a private home and went down and enrolled in school. Well, the principal came down there and he got me. Told the other principal that I really need to go back to Huntsville to resolve our differences. Went back to Huntsville. Nothing had changed. So I ended up going to Athens, Alabama, and was commuting every day. Never really got to know any of the people there. Principal said the only thing he required of me was to make some decent grades, which I did. I graduated very high in the class. And we got through all the senior year. I didn't get to play football my senior year, of course. And I was accepted to Alabama Polytechnic Institute. Today you know it as Auburn University. And that was a load off my back. I could drink any time I wanted because I didn't have anybody to account to. I was joined a fraternity and did a whole lot of partying and had a lot of fun. Somewhere around my senior year, summer before my senior year, they told me that I didn't have enough credits and things to continue with my design sequence in architecture. And so I ended up transferring schools into a business degree, which I regret. But I had a 50% scholarship from home. My father paid all the books, paid the room and board, paid tuitions, made me a little bit of spending money, but it didn't cover my bar bills. So first thing I did is I went out and I found myself a couple jobs part-time. One of them was at a service station. And I could drink on the job because the guy that owned the service station was a retired Navy chief. And George loved his whiskey, so he didn't really care much if me and the help were drinking beer on the hot afternoon at the service station. I also found a job part-time tending bar at a local beer joint where I had a charge account. And if the charge account got out of hand, the Pace brothers that owned the place, they'd find a way to let me work a few hours after school every day to take care of my bar bills. And college was football games and fraternity parties and trips to the beach during spring quarter, and it was a party. I don't know how I made the grades I did because I didn't put a lot of effort into it. Well, 1962, when the World's Fair was going on in Seattle, Washington, I picked up my mother and father, and I took them to Montana to visit. And then I had planned on hitchhiking on to Seattle to meet some fraternity brothers, but I had an uncle that was going that way, and I rode with him. Got there 3 days ahead of my people that I was going to meet there. I didn't go out to the World's Fair. I sat at the bar at the hotel for 3 days waiting for them. I did a lot of stuff like that. Anyway, I got out one of the nights before my mother and father, before we got to Shoto, Montana. We stopped for the night in White Sulphur Springs. I called the girl I'd been dating at 3 in the morning, Auburn time. Woke her up at the dormitory, asked her to marry me. And she agreed. Well, rather than hurry right back home, we went to the World's Fair. A couple of guys that were with me had never been out west before. They wanted to go to Yellowstone, so we ended up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, drinking, and I convinced them that Las Vegas wasn't out of the way on the way to Auburn. If you know your geography, you know that I sold them a real deal. At any rate, we also made a stop in Juarez, Mexico on the way and loaded the trunk up with cheap booze. They stopped us in Louisiana. We'd probably still be in jail. Got back to Auburn and continued to party. Christmas, Charlotte and I, my first wife, got married in Dothan, Alabama, and headed back to school to finish up our final quarter before we graduated. When we graduated that June, and she wasn't going to leave the South and get too far from Dothan, and I didn't care much for small towns, so we settled on let's take a look at Atlanta, Georgia. And that seemed to be agreeable to her. I liked the idea. Atlanta wasn't that big a city, but it was bigger than Dothan, Alabama, or Huntsville, Alabama. And I had one problem. I had been accepted for Naval OCS. And it was a commitment. All I had to do was report to Birmingham, Alabama, for a swearing-in ceremony, and I was off to Naval OCS. Luckily, right before I was supposed to report, we had gone back to Huntsville and found out that my wife was pregnant, and we needed to make some ultimate plans after they said we're not going to draft married men anymore, which I was a little skeptical about OCS anyway. I thought that might interfere with my drinking some. So we headed for Atlanta the day after my oldest daughter was born. And I found a job with Rich's department store in their store planning department. And spent spent six years with them, and had a great time, great company, nice people, a lot of fun, but they didn't pay that well. A great training ground. And 1966, friend of mine who was in the store fixture business, we did some business with, he told me about a Atlanta company that was looking for somebody to head up their store planning and construction department. Wanted to know if I was interested, and I said, definitely interested. And he told me it was Butler Shoe Corporation, because the MARTA track goes through there right now when it crosses over 85. It's where their office was. And I had made up my mind that there wasn't a whole lot of future at Rich's as far as pay. And if he offered me $1,000 more than I was making at Rich's, and I liked the job, I was going to take the job. Which I met Izzy Shapiro, the president, in his townhouse, and we talked for a couple hours, and he offered me the job. And when he told me what he was going to pay me, it was twice what I was making at Butler's. Plus, I was going to be traveling the whole country. And I wanted to tell him, you know, is the desk cleaned off now? I can go down there right now. It's only 7 o'clock in the evening. And I worked out a 30-day notice with Richards and went to work for Butler Shoes, which was the ideal job for somebody that was drinking. I had a Universal Air Travel card. I had an American Express card. Visa, MasterCard didn't exist then, so I had the two cards that I could go anywhere in the world, just throw it on the airline counter or throw it on the cashier's desk at a restaurant or a bar or whatever. And my drinking really took off. Probably had more disposable income that year than I did any year after. At any rate, after about 5 years at Rich's, I decided, in the worst possible time in the world, to go into the construction business. I left the job and went into the house building business. That was about the time interest rates soared, where if you had a house finished, you couldn't sell it. In fact, I ended up with the mortgage banking company going bankrupt. And the bank was telling me I was wealthy. 2 weeks later, I didn't have grocery money. Well, my wife decided the best thing for she and the kids to do, I'd had a second daughter, was to pick up and head back down to Dothan, Alabama, where she could stay with her mother and father, have a roof over their head. I tried to put something together here in Atlanta, but spent more time hanging around bars than I did. Finally decided to head for Florida and see if I could put something up down there. Went down there and stayed drunk for about 2 months. Well, 2 months into my stay down there, I'd been gone from Butler's for a little over a year. And one of my traveling drinking buddies there ran me down, wanted to know if I would entertain the idea of taking my old job back at Butler's. And I said, can I start this afternoon? So I came back to Atlanta, and went back to work and figured out a way to get my wife and kids back to Atlanta, and everything seemed to be going on pretty normal. We bought a house, traded the old car in, got a new car, and my drinking seemed to leveled off there for a little while. Only problem is, I never knew when I walked into a bar after work and took a drink, I never knew when it was going to stop. Never intentionally walked into a bar and said, I think I'll just get sloppy drunk tonight and see if I can get me a DUI on the way home. But that's the way it turned out a lot of times. I think at this point, through college and up to date, I probably had about 6 or 8 DUIs. But that wasn't a problem. If you had a little bit of money in that scope of time, the average fine for driving under the influence was about $300. So if you kept $300 in your wallet when you got stopped, 4 hours later with $300, you were back out of the door at jail. I did that several times. And picked up a couple in Chicago, one in Miami, one in Dallas, Texas. So my drinking was a problem to everybody but me. I had sort of a protector in the new president of Butler Shoes. Joe, Izzy's son, was the president, and he's the one that hired me back, and his reasoning why I was not an alcoholic was he had hired me, and he never would have hired an alcoholic if I just drank too much. And I was okay with that explanation. Well, it was New Year's Eve, 1976. We had gone to the Peachtree World of Tennis to a dance and New Year's Eve party. I'd had a couple of scotch and waters and everything seemed to be normal. We got in the car about 12:30, 1 o'clock and drove home. Had some neighbors that were having a party at their house that we'd been invited to, and I decided we ought to go just pop in there and say hello, wish everybody a happy New Year. And my wife said she was tired, she wasn't going down there. I said, well, I'll run down there for a minute or two. Well, next thought was, well, they're probably about to run out of booze this time of night, so I went in the liquor cabinet and got 2 magnums of champagne, carried them down there, and somebody said I drank them. I don't really remember a whole lot about it. About 2 in the morning, I don't know where I was going, but I got in the car and left Lilburn, Georgia, and was somewhere down around North Lake Mall. DeKalb County pulled me over, took me to jail, charged me with driving under the influence. Well, I posted my $300 bond. 4 hours later, I was back in the car again somewhere. Before I got out of DeKalb County, they stopped me again. I ended up with my 2nd DUI on the same shift at the police department. And that was all sort of vague of what happened. At any rate, I'd had a deal with my wife that if you go to jail, don't waste your dime calling me. I ain't coming after you. Well, after 2 days, I decided that's the only shot I had left. Called her and she said she'd think about it and she may or may not send somebody to get me. Well, late that afternoon, Bill, who turned out to be my first sponsor, I had known him from the bar there at the motel on Presidential Drive where he was sleeping in an old car out in the weeds before he decided to get sober. Well, the deal was I had agreed that I would check myself into a mental institution if somebody would come get me. Well, they didn't give me time to back out on it. I went straight from jail across the expressway here to Peachtree Parkwood, which was a mental institution, but they had an alcohol and drug rehabilitation wing on the building, and They locked me up in there. I wonder where that I had signed myself in and could have left any time. I thought I'd been incarcerated for 28 days, which first night I was there, they had a shortage of beds, and they told me that here's a bed that you can sleep in until we can get you in a permanent room. It was a padded cell, and the bed had straps on it. And I said, I ain't about to lay down in that bed. Well, I sat up all night in the lobby area out there. Second night, I sat up all night, but an old hog farmer from up in Cumming, Georgia, sat up with me. R.C., they put him on the staff there because he'd stayed so long getting sober himself, and he wasn't going to leave, so they put him on the staff. Luckily, Joni and Bernard and Harriet and Chris, the whole crew was AA people. Second night, R.C. asked me a question. He said, Mickey, if you don't have a problem with alcohol, what are you doing in an alcohol and drug rehabilitation center? I couldn't answer that question. That was probably the beginning of the thought process that maybe I've got a problem with alcohol. I'm not sure, but maybe. And I served out my 28 days there. The day, they turned me loose about noon on the 28th day, and looked around, and the only place I felt safe was right here. We'd come over here to meetings four or five times, so I got them to drop me here, and I spent the afternoon down sitting downstairs just trying to figure out what the hell I was going to do. I didn't know whether I had a job. I didn't know whether I had a wife and family. I didn't know whether I had a house, a place to live. All I knew is that I've been almost a month locked up across the expressway, and they're trying to get me to sober up. Well, I used January the 3rd as my sobriety date because that's the day they awarded me a white chip. I didn't pick it up. They awarded it to me, and I said, all right, I'll put it in my pocket. You know, if that's what they do here, that's fine. Well, at the time, I had four DUIs that I had not been to court on yet. And a judge that was a member here suggested that if I went to AA meetings on a regular basis, it probably wouldn't hurt me when I finally got before a judge to figure out what we were going to do with these DUIs. Well, that was almost a year later. They arranged it where I could go down to the DeKalb County Courthouse, a certain judge, walk in his office and lay $5,000 on his desk and walk out, and the DUIs would go away. And they would rescind the letter that I'd received that said, send me your driver's license forever. It's hard to get around in a city like Atlanta without a driver's license. You can do it, but then we didn't have the bus service. We didn't have MARTA. That was a way to turn me loose where I could once again go and find myself a job that the lack of transportation wasn't going to be an issue. Well, 5 years sober, my wife and I got to talking and looking around, and we didn't have anything left in common except two kids, and we ended up getting a divorce. And she died here about 6 months ago. We were able to remain friends, and we never let any of our personal feelings interfere with anything that had to do with the kids. Kids got along fine with her, got along fine with me, and we remained friends until she died. Well, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do when I decided to leave Lilburn and went back to my office and sat down at the desk. And the phone kept ringing and ringing and ringing, and finally I said, hell with it, and I answered the phone. It was one of my long-time running buddies, Charlie Jones. Charlie had about a 7,000-square-foot house up on Lake Lanier that he lived in all by himself. So I ended up moving up there. Another one of our friends that spent a lot of time there on weekends was DeKalb County Superior Court Judge. And I think for about 2 years, the three of us sponsored each other, which we had a lot of fun staying sober. And by that time I had came to believe. One of the things that started that process out is when I left Peachtree Parkwood and parked downstairs here for the afternoon. I didn't know of anybody in the world that I really thought I ought to call, but I needed to tell somebody what I was doing. I guess justification. I called an old girlfriend that she and I remained good friends until she died here a couple of years ago. But anyway, we had dated in junior high school and high school, and I called her and told her what was going on. And she said, Nikki, she said, you remember when in the spring we used to go down to the beach, Panama City, and we were going to spend a day together one day, and I came down there a little bit after daylight, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, found you, you're sitting out at the end of the pier, all by yourself, drinking whiskey. She said, normal 17-year-olds don't do crap like that. And it was a long process for me to figure out that I was in fact an alcoholic. I had all the excuses, but probably the main part of staying sober during those years was the Thursday night men's meeting here. Sat right over there next to a gentleman who used to call me a piss ant, Fred Roten. If I started to say something, he'd hit me in the ribs with his elbow and say, shut up, piss ant, you ain't got nothing to tell. He said, open up, listen, figure out what's going on. Said, when you got some experience, strength, and hope to share, said, you can do it then, but you don't need to do it now. Well, got involved here at the club and cooking Christmas dinners, Thanksgiving dinners. Was on the board of directors for 3 years, and finally got comfortable with sobriety and all the head games I used to play with myself about not being part of, and looking back at that time, I figured out, you know, I was part of a fraternity, I was part of a football team, I was part of a bunch of people, still going to see a bunch of those old friends at a 60th high school reunion next month, and not being part of was between my ears. Comfortable with sobriety, I might just suggest to anybody that thinks they may have a problem, or the court just told you have a problem, or you've been sentenced by your family to come down here and try to get sober, doesn't make any difference. Stick around long enough to convince yourself whether you do or don't. Some of you probably don't have a problem. Some of you don't think you have a problem, but do have a problem. 41 years doesn't seem like that long. It goes by rather quickly, and thank the God of my understanding, which I found in this program, not the God you read about in the Baptist Bible, probably closer to Buddha than the Baptist, found a God of my understanding. Don't drink, go to meetings, and it's been a race, but it's been an enjoyable race. I've been able to do a lot of the stuff that I, quote, didn't have time to do when I was drinking. Made about 4 trips around the world, been to about 50 different countries. 3 years ago, I grabbed Mr. Lawrence, who sits, is not here tonight, that we generally sit over here on Thursday night together. He just turned 80 years old, and I convinced him that we ought to take a trip to Cape Town, South Africa, and join up with a safari for 42 days on the way to Nairobi, which we did. Even though they required us to send them a letter saying that our doctor said we're not too old to make this trip. And we had a lot of fun. And I told him the other day, I said, Larry, we ought to do that again. And he said, no, he said, once is enough. He said, he's turning 83 now, and he's going to confine his travels to Europe where they have conveniences. Earlier this evening, we were talking about travels, and I said, you know, I need to get back to Southeast Asia. I've always wanted to go to Laos, and I may try to do that before this year's over. Nobody's told you they love you today. Let me be the first. Thank you.
Mickey, I think it was 1981, I think, 80-81, something like that. It was the night Bill Curry's Yellow Jackets beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl over in Birmingham. And I was on my way home from Birmingham, and I called up my girlfriend and asked her to marry me, and she said, "You're drunk." And she turned me down. But she accepted like 6 months later. She's my ex-wife now.
It'll never leave if I give it and try.